woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, I'm play Sachs and Jacks. Somehow, Ricky on the board. I watched the news here and I don't know. So, Ricky, it's somewhere between shocked and appalled. I don't know which it is. Maybe it's, can it be both?
That's a great way to put it, Chief.
Just shocked and appalled. SP Futures up 2. Exit Futures up 60. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do. But shocked and appalled about what?
Where do you want me to start?
To be shocked, well, now appalled is, you know, it's a little easier, right? But to be shocked, something would have to be out of pattern, right?
That these guys at SpaceX are already trying to buy somebody else for the money they got yesterday?
I'll say this about that. You know, my whole 15 shares, by the way, got sold at the end of the first trading day, which, you know, may or may not end up being a wise decision. Of course, with all 15 shares that I was allocated, it's rather irrelevant, even if it runs like a demon, right? It's the difference between, one evening's bar tab and three, but yeah, okay, whatever. The thing that I think is so amusing about this is that my read on the way they did this, now maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so, is that it was an attempt to essentially sucker people like myself that have a decent sized trading account into chasing it after it opened for trading.
By the way, I could probably figure how much money you got in your trading account from a client, but a friend of a client.
Oh, well, okay.
Because he has $35 million in his, and he got 500 shares.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Well, you know, I don't know if there's a ratable thing there or not.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually a formula or what, but he thought he was going to get... He wanted 10,000, he got 500.
He got 500, yeah, okay. So he's got, I don't know. That the ratability on that doesn't actually... match, but... I suspect, and of course, again, I don't have facts because I don't know how that set of decisions was made. But you know, the offering company has a fairly substantial amount of leverage in terms of actual telling the book runners essentially what they want them to do. Now, the amusing part of this is that there was all kinds of stuff flying around, and you sent an email out on it too, related to Green Shoe. Okay. Now, the amusing part of it's been so long for IPOs of any kind of size. You know, they're back to the late 1990s, right? There are a lot of people don't, they have zero, I mean, like zero knowledge of what was really going on and how this works. And I had several
it works
friends,
for some.
Well, yeah, but I had several friends of mine over the weekend ask me to kind of explain what was going on because they literally had never been in the market during the time when these things came out before, and of course I was. All right, so so I kind of went through the whole thing, but the amusing thing about the Green Shoe thing is that is just pure additional money over what SpaceX expected to get from the actual IPO process. Okay, your number of shares being offered times price. All right. And the greenshoe is essentially overallotment, so it's additional authorized by the board's emission of shares out of, and the money goes to the company. All right, fine. However, there is, unlike all the other stock that's out there that is subject to lockup constraints, there is none on this. So,
well, if the money goes to the company, there really wouldn't be a lockup. The lockup is if the money goes to insiders or if people
sell
parts of
stuff.
Yeah,
but that's the thing is there is no lockup on it. Okay, but when you have that sort of a thing taken down, the book runners that have access to this and can get it, if you know, as you know, as anyone that trades knows, if I buy IBM, if I put in an order to buy IBM stock today, IBM doesn't get any of that money. Okay,
you're buying it from another person. A lot of people don't understand that, but boy,
right, I'm buying it from another person that owns it. Okay, and so, and the other thing is, unlike the futures markets, where for everyone that wins, someone loses, right? Because that's the way it works. In the stock market, the loss is ephemeral. In many cases, in other words, if I sell IBM if I sell my shares at $100 and somebody else buys them at $100 and the stock goes to $200, I didn't lose $100. I lost $100 of opportunity cost, in that I didn't get the gain from that run. The other guy got it, but I didn't actually lose $100.
I have this conversation with clients all anyway. What are you looking at it for? It's not yours anymore. Get it off your screen.
Well, that's exactly right. So, I mean, you have an opportunity cost, but it's not a loss. It's not a loss either on paper or
some
out of
people
your,
are absolutely convinced that they lost that money. No, they didn't.
No, they didn't lose that money. But here's the thing, though, that from a standpoint of the book runner, if you're one of the people that was doing this, and you therefore can take that green shoot down, and the stock now is trading just over 200. Well, my God, you got it. You got the green shoot at 135. So you could spit that into the buy order flow, and the company gets the 135. Whether you be Morgan Stanley or Goldman or whoever, gets the difference between the 135 and the 200.
I wonder if that has to go to any of the retailer. They can take it all.
They can keep it if they want to.
They don't usually. It's not. They take some, but they're not going to. Depending on the thing, I remember this from years ago. Like you said, the people inside will sometime they'll hang on to some of it if they think it's a really good one, but. And Morgan Stanley really isn't in the business of saying this is a good one, hanging on to 50,000 shares or something for like three
right.
weeks.
That's not their job.
No.
Well, that's not their job. Their job is to make a market, right? So you've got bids at 200. You'd be out of your effing mind not to take the $65.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when a company can't sell that out right away. The only time they can sell stock in the market is if they bought it, if it's treasury stock.
Well, now but that's not the company. You see, the green shoe is part of the allocation. But SpaceX got the 135 for however many shares were in the green shoe.
Right.
Okay. But now Morgan Stanley now holds them.
Or somebody. It's distributed.
Whoever got it, Goldman, yeah. Morgan Stanley, whoever. But they can sell them to now.
Right. Well, yeah. Unless they're I don't suppose an insider could be part of a green shoot. But I'm not positive on
that. No, they generally aren't. But the point is there's no lockup on them.
What we're talking about with the lockup is if Carl and I were on the board, say, of SpaceX, and we were given some shares as part of the thing going out, we maybe not can't sell ours for 6 months or a year or something. There's a restriction on it,
right?
And it's done with a lot of stock options. It's done with a lot of way people do stuff. Well, the stock options usually isn't I don't know if you'd have a stock option out like 2 years with a restriction after the option, but I suppose it could happen, but I don't know if it generally does.
I've worked for people where I got them, and then unfortunately the one that actually meant something, the company blew up, so they were worth nothing. That's the risk, right? But they were restricted in terms of my ability to exercise them. But once I'd exercised them, I could do whatever I wanted with them.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, I was going through the stuff yesterday. So what do you make of the people that I met at the funeral listening to the show, and they like every one of the guests, even you?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, it's the old thing. I'd never join a club where they'd have me, right?
So, but I said, even Hal, even Carl. No, I didn't. I didn't say that. But anyway, I felt pretty good about all of us when I heard that.
I think it's absolutely fascinating. You know, and here's like a little microcosm of how full of scam and fraud everything is. So, when I lived in Florida. I own boats, and because I like them, and I like being on the water and fishing and diving and things like that. Well, I don't own one here, all right? So in my garage, I still have a slalom water ski. Those things are a little expensive, but they don't go bad. It's a fiberglass and wood and, you know, sandwich with...
It's like a snow ski.
And the other thing is, unlike a snow ski where the bindings have very limited adjustment range, it's essentially a Velcro-wrapped piece of very thick neoprene, like wetsuit material. So, the binding is not foot-size specific. I mean, it sort of. All right, like you and I could use the same water ski, okay? Even though you probably wear a different size shoe.
I've never been on a one ski, so I don't. If I used it, I'd be for about a few feet.
Well, learning to get up is actually. People say get up on two and drop one. I've never been able to do that. I always instantaneously wipe out if I attempt it. But I can get up on one. It's not a problem. So I decide I'm going to put this thing up on Nextdoor, for sale thing, right? Within 2 minutes of listing this, a couple pictures, you know, here it is, okay. And I mean, if you go out and buy one, these are reasonably expensive. So I'm just like, you know, hey, man, if someone tosses me a hundo, you can have it. And within minutes, I get three people all start, is it still available? Exactly the same words. I send back, yes, it is. Every last one of them wants to Venmo me the money, but they're not. But they're going to have their brother come get it or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And every last one of them, I'm like, look, cash on the table, in a public place. You know, we'll do this at my local pub.
Yeah.
All right. You hand me the money, I hand you the ski. Every single one of them disappears. I do not know what the scam is. And how they pull it off, Venmoing me the money, all right? But there's a scam in here.
Somehow they're getting access to something.
Somehow they're trying to get into my bank account. Yeah. I'm assuming, right?
Well, one of my drinking buddies had his bank account piled into, and he's on Venmo. What's the other one? There's a couple of them.
PayPal and Venmo, and
somehow he. You know, it was 20 grand, somewhere along those lines. I mean, pretty good. And I don't know how, but the bank, after 2-3 weeks, managed to get the dough back. And I talked to Kevin about it, and Kevin goes, they hacked his phone. So if that happened, why the bank is liable, I have no idea. But, you know, I'm glad my friend got his money back. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's probably, I mean, my guess is that what was going to be next was a text message with a link in it that doesn't really go to the right place.
Yeah.
Right? And as soon as you give them your credentials, then they can rob you.
But the dude's still every day. We'll take a Zelle. You can sell him some dough. We had a couple of young people the other night show up at our you know, we had a group. It's kind of weird, but one of the guys in our group used to be at the SIBO. And, you know, he had a bunch of people working for him, so he'd show up on a Thursday or a Friday, and he'd have his little entourage of, you know, younger people wanting to meet people and so forth. And, the guy now lives in Tennessee, and he's no longer with the SIBO, but once in a while we still get a few of the young guys pop by because they know there's a table of dudes on a Thursday night or something talking about the markets. It's astounding to me how somebody will sit down and go, well, I don't have any cash, and I don't have a credit card. By the way, who do I sell? And I'm like,
yeah.
What makes you think some dude's here, the only person he's here is for you to sell him?
Chief, I'll tell you, in terms of, like, the craziness, just the total craziness, you know, you saw this thing that happened with Anthropic a couple of days ago, yeah. Right? Okay, where they get designated, you know, basically their mythos and fable things get designated as munitions, essentially. Okay. The company did this to itself. Now, I have some experience with this. Gee, being in the computer industry and seeing all this happen with cryptography back in the 1990s and the early 2000s, you'd think that somebody would actually understand this. The company itself, not the government, the company declared this thing as a weapon, this model, this LLM, okay? And essentially said, this is a weapon because its primary purpose in life is to search through code bases and try to figure out how to break into computers with them. Okay, so you self-declare it as a weapon. Then you put it out where the public can get at it as supposedly guardrailed to prevent it from being used that way.
Yeah, right.
And somebody, by the way, it turns out that it's both a vendor and a competitor. Amazon, this I didn't know initially, but then this popped out in the news too, that it was actually Amazon's researchers that figured out how to jailbreak it. They jailbreak it, they send the information over to Commerce. Commerce turns around and slams the entire thing with an ITAR designation. Which incidentally is exactly what you'd expect them to do once you've declared it as a weapon if you had a brain in your head. And oh, by the way, just by way of example, I can buy, as an American citizen, a very high-quality night vision rifle scope. It's not illegal for me to possess it. It's a munition under ITAR, okay? If I buy one of those things in the box, there's a nice little piece of paper that says, do not allow any contact with any non-U.S. citizen, because if you did, that's a federal offense. That's a felony. You can't export it without a Commerce Department license.
Well, can you shoot a non-citizen?
No.
Oh.
If you're a non-citizen, I actually can't go to the range with you and hand it to you to use. I'll go to prison for doing that.
But you could shoot the non-citizen.
Well, I could shoot the non-citizen with it, yeah. But, yeah. But I can't let the non-citizen
shoot you.
Well, I can't let him use it, right?
Okay.
Or touch it, examine it, whatever. All right, well, here's the funny thing about it, though, Chief. Anthropic has a crap ton of H-1Bs here, all of whom are non-citizens.
Oh, boy. It's...
Now, all of a sudden, well, hey, guess
Carl,
what?
You can't... That's why the stuff we talk about at Switchers, you can't write fiction like this.
Well, Chief, you know what? These guys, this is the arrogance of people who think the rules don't apply to them.
They're running the place.
Well, and guess what? Now all of a sudden they get kicked in the shorts, and they absolutely deserved it, and it was their own arrogance that did it. Now, if you happen to be someone who's running a network of systems these days that has untrusted people that have access to those machines, okay, they can sign in, they can do routine kinds of things. Over the last few months, you have had a nightmare of patches. I mean, an unbelievable number of them that have shown up. All right, I'm on the security notification list for several of these builds because I use this stuff in my daily work. All right, the number of these flaws that have been uncovered by these tools is voluminous. However, most of them have been around for years, sometimes a decade or more. And people are screaming about how this is such a huge thing. I got news for you. If you think the spooks haven't known about all these and haven't been using them to break, this is not so much about criminal hackers, this is about governments. If you think the spooks haven't had this information for the last 10 years, have been using it to get into people's machines, hello, Stuxnet, anyone? When we blew up all those Iranian centrifuges years ago? So, whose fingers are really getting slammed in the door?
And the thing of it is, we don't have,
Well, now, hang on a minute, Chief. Here's the thing. So that the fingers who are getting slammed in the door, yes, there is some of that that is among the criminals are breaking into people's machines and stealing their stuff or crypto-locking them or just destroying or whatever. But the vast majority of the impact on this is actually in the security, the so-called security/espionage infrastructure within governments. Because now, once the ordinary Joe knows this thing is screwed and has a patch to fix it, he's going to slam the door on the fingers of the CIA.
So what happens? This is kind of a broad discussion, but we know Kennedy, so you'll be back. But what happens when the government becomes the enemy? And I mean,
You're going to have to go dig out that old piece of paper from 1776.
I mean, I was talking yesterday, and we'll talk about this one. By the way, Micron's up another $40. Just as a way of review. 7/17/2000, I think we were doing our seminar in the Bahamas, Micron was $97. 6/10/2002 was $22. 6/14/2004 was $14.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sort of done this before. But you know, I'm because of the politics, and the idea of which is least worse, the Democrats or Republicans. I mean, you can have that debate, friggin' forever. But I think what people are losing into the mix is a lot of stuff is going on that is neither. Somewhere along the line, in my opinion, you shouldn't think for a second that because you like Trump more than whatever her name was, that he's a good guy. That somehow. It's like, you see it happen in football or baseball. The middle linebacker shot somebody and killed them. Well, they must be innocent because they're my middle linebacker. You can't. I think most people who listen to the show, and maybe most people, you got to be more mentally mature than that. I mean, the idea that any of these people are that we probably have lost that with Jimmy Carter. I don't think he was the world's best president, but he actually gave a shit about regular people.
One of the things that's been done with some of these AI models, so there's some study work that I've become aware of, where people have taken the disclosed, now this is disclosed, okay, congressional trading records.
Yeah.
And they correlated it with bills, committees, and, basically the work Congress actually does, right? And managed to put time series coordination to this, which, hey, guess what? You don't need an AI for that. A regular database will do just fine.
If you want to look, which they don't want to.
If you bother to look.
Yeah.
So anyway, some people did this. And what they have found is that the correlation factor between trades put on by these Congress people, the bills in the committees that they sit on, and the fact that the trade was put on before the bill was heard in the committee and then passed.
it absolutely pales to what's been going on in the White House.
But the point being that essentially the level of larceny that's being conducted here is so far off the rack that it entirely explains how somebody goes into Congress with a net worth of $150,000 and 2 years later comes out with $20 million.
I don't think the trading necessarily did that because, first of all, they're not that good at it, even though they have the news.
Well, actually, as it turns out, in these cases where these correlation factors have and what these people have published, yes, they are.
Well, I looked at some of Trump's trades.
A lot of his
were wrong.
Well, I'm just saying he's not nearly as smart as some of these people in Congress. Okay, I'm just saying.
Well, here's my to think for a second that these, I mean, I when I assume Joel's going to pop in. When he does, we'll come back. I don't know if you were able to listen yesterday, but I decided to go instead of walking down the political minefield that oh my God, these guys are perfect. They care about us. I decided to move over to Japan because I don't know if anybody really gives a crap about. People care about Japanese people. Anybody cares about all people, I would hope. But yeah. the screw job that this war has allowed their government to do to them, is exactly the screw job that's happening here.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, anybody who thinks that the market is up because we're, you know, because of the peace deal, the market's already up. It's up because...
Well, and Chief, but as I pointed out, anybody that thinks that the inflation is entirely due to this lockdown is out of their effing
mind. Oh, they're out of their mind.
Because I, you know, I've been pointing out the stuff with the PPI since before the shooting started. Duh. Oh, by the way, now let's give credit where credit is due. I just sent in an online renewal for my passport. Okay? Because it was going to expire at the end of the year, and you got to have 6 months worth of validity if you're going to use it. So, okay, you know, all this, right? All right. When I put this thing in, no expedited request. No, I don't have any travel planned. Blah, 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 blah. You know, the usual things, right? Just ordinary dude comes back and says, okay, you know, routine processing is typically 6 to 8 weeks. I put this in on the 8th. I got the book yesterday.
Same thing happened when I did mine. Same thing happened to me.
1 week.
Yeah. Well, mine was, I think, it wasn't COVID, but it was some sort of shutdown. And they said if you didn't do the extra special processing, God knows it could have taken you 3 months. I got it in like 2 weeks.
Well, I literally 7 days.
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks. And
it was in my mailbox yesterday.
Yeah, I mean...
So,
credit where
credit is due.
But
okay? that's
been happening a while, because I think I got mine during Biden. I'm not saying, you know, Biden's one. I'm saying that those guys have been a little more efficient than... But they still want to goad you into the extra money for the other processing.
Well, of course they do. Yeah. But I mean, I don't have anything planned, so I'm like, well, if it takes a month or 2 months to come back, I don't care.
Yeah, they send the old one back too with the holes in it.
Well, no, the if you do the online renewal, you don't send in the old one anymore.
Oh, well, because I sent the old one, and I still got it back in like 2 weeks.
No, I know. And yeah. The last time I renewed it, yes, and they punch holes in it.
Did you get the little card?
Well, I've got that. That'll probably be here today. They come separately.
Yeah, they come separately for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, who knows why they can't put them both in the same envelope? But
did you get a nice picture of yourself?
Oh, it was a terrible picture, but I took it myself. So, you know, it is what it is.
You know, a guy like you, with nothing but scratch, I went over to the Walgreens. I got a horrible picture of my driver's license card, right?
Yeah.
So I went over to get my passport card. And of course, I'm not taking good pictures these days anyway. I mean, look in the mirror and I go, ah. But I went over to Walgreens. The guy was on, oh, those are no good. I can make them better. He don't know this and that and the other thing. All of a sudden, I didn't look bad at the thing. Hey, can I get this on my driver's license?
Well, you could submit
it. It cost me, what, $5 for the guy at Walgreens to do it or something.
Well, yeah, but you could submit it yourself, and I have, you know, professional photographic equipment, so you could submit it electronically now, and I did.
Did you have the part on the right side and the whole bit?
Oh, no, you got... No, I thought I'd try to do the little hairline mustache under the nostrils, but I didn't.
I don't think you were with... on the show when we had a guest from the Federal Reserve. And this is freaky. The guy looked exactly like one of my friends from college. I mean,
oh, wow.
I mean, the guy absolutely looked like they were twins that were separated at birth. The guy comes in, and all of a sudden, was this the 100th anniversary of the Fed? So wherever year that was. So the guy comes in, and there's a guy on TV on CNBC from the Fed. And the guy goes, gee, who the hell do we got out there? Look at how he screwed this up. And I go, He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, look, they're photographing him from the side which you part your hair.
Yeah.
And I go, well, does that make any difference? You never go on TV and be filmed from that side. You always look like shit.
Right, right.
And I go,
By the way, Joel's up. Let's
all right, let's talk about this Japan thing and kind of what's going on here and how people are convinced that these people that you elect and how somebody even was telling me yesterday or the day before that the new guy in the Fed, with all this stuff he owns, is somehow gonna cut the inflation out. You know what? If you believe that, I got a bridge for you. I mean, there's no way the guy's gonna sink his portfolio by 20%. I don't think. I mean, unless he's, because I don't know if Volcker had any stock. I don't know if he cared, and neither did Jimmy Carter. But that's not the way of the world anymore. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Doing pretty good on this. What's today? Synthetic Wednesday.
It's Tuesday.
No, it's not. Chief, come on. I'm really disappointed.
Oh, you mean
you
Tuesday is now Synthetic Wednesday? What are we talking about?
Do you
know
why?
No idea.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
So am I.
A seasoned options guy like you.
Options on SpaceX start trading today.
Okay. Oh, okay.
No, you're wrong too.
Oh my God!
Back in your cage. That's Carl, right?
Yep.
Hey, Carl, well, how you doing?
I'm
anytime
doing good.
You want to come on and give me a hard time, you know, that's just not reserved. Okay, I'm going to ask again. When you talk synthetic, right? What is that in the options market?
Well, options, long call, short put, is synthetic stack.
Yeah, you create something.
Yeah.
So, related to the trading days of the week in this week.
All right, well, we're not trading Fridays. Was that part of it?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, it's a synthetic Wednesday.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, yep.
And you know what else? There's little things that are interesting in the market. We put on a lot of spreads, wow, some yesterday, for people because there is some of the stocks now have expirations on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Well, since the Friday we're not trading, those are on Thursday. And we got some pretty interesting positions on with buying Thursday, selling Wednesday, giving yourself like a one-day shot in some area, in some directions.
Well, that's, I mean, that's, Chief, that's doing what you do well, and that's taking advantage, you know, still, you know, having some upside, but taking advantage of the premium.
Because we did is, we've got, you know, some stocks that I think might, you know, have a little upside to them. One is Microsoft, and now, of course, it's down $4. We did some stuff in there, and I'm not supposed to talk about the specific stuff, but we bought, like, one, because instead of doing a straight covered right, we bought one Thursday, sold two on Wednesday. So we actually have a combination of a time spread and a covered right where if potentially, and we did it for a credit, so potentially we could, you know, it could expire worthless on Wednesday night and we essentially have a free call for Thursday. You know, which once a year or 2 years or 3 years, something's going to happen that day and you're long something for free. And whenever you can get something for free, of course, if it runs up before then, you're chasing the call. So it's not always that easy, but the bottom line is whenever you can give yourself a chance to be long or short something for nothing, you want to grab it, because once in a while, you know, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then. Once in a while, something,
we know that.
Yeah, once in a while something's going to happen to you that we're all that, you know, Microsoft or whatever it is, IBM or McDonald's, if you're long a free call or put for a day, someday the thing's going to be up $5 on your day and it's your day.
Those are free.
But it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work. You're not just taking somebody's money and charging them a fee and playing golf. You know, it's a lot of work. And it's hard to get fills.
You're playing golf or they're playing golf?
I mean, that's what, if put it this way, if I wasn't me and I wanted to do it all over again, I would just have, I'd be like Fisher Investments, you know, where I just grab everybody's money, put it in the same spot, charge everybody 1.5% and play golf. And hope
do you
the
play golf?
I used to play a lot. A little back issue.
Tough sport.
Oh,
tough
it's sport. Very frustrating.
Yep.
But, you know, it's... Yep. It's changed so much. When we were young, you know, Cock Hill used to host the Western Open. In those days, we would go out, and for the exorbitant price of $20, we could play Dubs Red, which is number four. And then when you were done, you could walk across the street, and they'd let you play there for free. So we would go out and play 36 holes carrying your bag. I don't think I could do that now. Do you think?
No. You know what? Tough sport. Did as a kid. I played on Sunday.
Really? How'd you do?
I did okay. You know, I hit some. I could hit the ball. I just on one. I may be on two fairway. You know.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, on one hole, on four, I was not in the five fairway, but I was on the outer rough.
That's how you. That's how you meet new people going the other fairway.
Yeah, but. You know what, just and my wife told me I was a real baby about this. When I grew up playing golf with good golfers, right? And you played golf. Like, you went up, when someone went up to approach the ball, you shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because when I go up there, I grip it and rip it, right?
Yep.
But, man, you know, people are chit-chatting, you know, when you're up there addressing the ball. And then this group I was playing with, these new guys, I hope they're not listening. I don't think they are. They would, like, you know, they're people behind us. They're moving up. And the guy goes up to the tee. puts his ball on the tee, and then he goes, "Oh, I got a story for you guys."
Oh, good.
When I was driving back from up north. And I'm like, I just turned around,
I just went
to my car, and I'm like, I don't want to hear, I'm not going to swear on your show, I don't want to hear your story while you're up on the tee. You know, maybe when we're walking off the green or something. So I just get in that karma, and I'm just like aggravated, and that's not good for your golf game.
Well, we used to carry our clubs and walk the course in 3 hours and a half. I mean, that's the idea now is you're 5 hours in the cart. You hear my little golf, joke from last week?
I took a cart. I mean, I'm not out there for exercise.
You know, actually, if you got a bum back, which I sort of have, getting in and out of the cart's worse than walking. If you do it 50 times.
I mean, I'm out there to play golf.
Did you hear my little joke last week about the golf?
But, Chief, I got a question for you. Then I got to hop. When is SpaceX going to have a down day?
Same day Micron does. Whatever that is.
Well, no, Micron has down days.
Yeah, well.
Come on. It's day two. Give me a prediction.
Did you see they're buying Cursor any sphere for $60 billion. The money, not only are people giving them money for nothing, they're turning around and buying other places.
I don't mind. You know what? I mean, as bearish as I am, I was not bearish this IPO. Did I buy it? No, but the price pattern that I thought was going to happen on the first day was I thought it would open like 185, maybe go crazy. Cross 200, pull back a little bit, but it opened up. It was very orderly. It's gone up every day. Now trading 205. So, Chief,
well, you know, and on a very small scale. I mean, this is so insane, Joel. If for instance, I had a load of BS like these guys do, and put PTI out for an IPO, and somebody gave me $40 billion, the first thing I would do. Just turn around and buy Schwab or something with money somebody just handed me. I mean, you just give me this money, I'm gonna go buy a real firm. I mean, it's so insane.
I bought the move.
What?
I do. So, okay. Well, anything else, Chief?
I'm anxious to come back on your show.
You know what? I just was thinking about that this morning, and let me talk to my production assistant, and because he's been handling a lot of that lately. So let me get with him, and so you might not see an email from me. You might see it from someone else, okay?
All right, bud, you take care of yourself.
Okay, go Blue.
Kyle, before we get tossed off on something else, you did hear my little golf joke, didn't you?
Oh, of course, and by the way, I play, but I suck.
Well, you're doing better than the five, I hope, like in the joke.
Well, but my thing with that is I play, but I suck, and but I actually prefer to walk, except that now I don't play actively today, but I've still got my sticks, they're sitting over there, I got my cleats and all this. when I used to, the various places all got to the point that they were ridiculously hissy about the idea of you actually walking the course as opposed to, taking their carts. And I mean, the assumption I have there is that that was really about, okay, this is how we soak the guy for another, hunk of money in order to, take the cart, right? But I'm not so sure. I don't know if that's true or not, but what I do know is that this had absolutely no positive impact in terms of the speed of play.
No, it doesn't.
Which is, of course, the argument.
Well, God help you if you got to stay in a cart pass.
Well, and that's the thing is, especially if you're a person like me that has an 18 handicap defined as that's about how many balls I lose in a round.
Well, you got like Dr. J, where if he loses 12 and finds 10, he only lost 2.
Well, I suppose, but I still swear, and always will, that the rigged part of this game is that all the balls you can buy as an ordinary player, not as a tournament pro or whatever, all those balls have GPSs in them and they all seek water.
That's about. I'm not so sure that isn't the truth, but the well, anyway, I think what you're seeing about the cart, there's kind of two kinds of courses in this world. One is the old ones, like the Silver Lakes and those kinds of places, and some of the old country clubs were all built about the same time here. They right. were designed for people to walk.
Right.
So if you get up there's a tee or a green, just go look, you know, the tee's right next to it.
Right.
But there's other ones now for for like housing places and so forth. You could be a block and a half from the next tee because they want everybody
I know. And
so there's no way you can right. you can walk that thing, I don't think. I mean, even my younger...
You can, but it's... it has done nothing. I don't play actively now.
Will you ever see some of the... Sorry, Nora. You ever see some of the walking the pros have to do when they're on one of these courses that's designed for carts?
Oh, yeah.
They're 100 yards between green and tee.
But, you know, but here's the thing, though, Chief. So what? Okay? And I think it's part of the game. And that it ought to be part of the game. And I will give some credit here. The one thing with the cart is when they got the cute little thing running around with the beer.
Oh, yeah,
the
there you cart, go.
Now you got somewhere to put it while you're playing, right?
Well, yeah. You know. God. Well, there's a couple courses out in Galena, and it's very mountainous. If you ever, quick geography of Illinois, Joe Davies County, if you drive out there, you're going, where the hell am I? I'm not in Illinois. Well, it's the only part of Illinois that wasn't touched by the glacier. And it's there's no mountains, but it's as hilly as the Rockies. I mean, you're up and down all over the place. And some of those tees, a couple of the tees on the general course, you can see three states from. I don't know that you're climbing to the top of that tee with your cart or with the bag on your shoulder too easily, even when you're 25.
Well, Chief, years ago, when I used to play much more actively, there was a course just outside of Toronto that I played when I was in Canada that was like that.
Okay, and the Canadian people love golf. It's a big sport there.
I got to tell you, the views. Now, this was kind of a bougie kind of place, all right? But I poked up for the money. The views from some of the tees and the greens were spectacular.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Spectacular. So.
Well, if you ever want to, sometimes when we used to go out there a lot, I would just, when everybody else is asleep, I'd get up at 5:30 and I'd just walk the course. Talk about a workout.
Well, when I was a kid, I caddied at the bougie course that we didn't have the kind of money I could play.
You were a looper?
One of the people that...
Bill Murray, Carl, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, there you go. One of the perks was that on Monday mornings until noon, as a caddy, you could play for, you know, you were allowed
to play. We could do that, too, at Ridge.
And, but when I used to do that, one of the deals the rest of the time was if you wanted better tips, you got up early and you walked it so you knew where the pins were. So,
yeah. Well, anyway, what did you make of that? Instead of beating up on our governments for the last 25 years, I looked at what went on in Japan during this Iran situation.
Yep.
And it is illuminating because I would hope that even the people that are the Trump lovers or whoever the lovers are in the show can look past that, or the Biden lovers or whatever, and just look at what happened. And we have a situation where the Japanese market, with all the wringing of hands and feet regarding the poor Japanese paying up for the oil, which, by the way, they were, and having to mess with their currency to buy dollar, you know, to buy their currency back because it was going over 160 to the dollar and all this stuff. And John Lee came back and he said the average person, well, the person he talked to, he didn't talk to everybody in Japan, said the inflation for the first time over there is jamming everybody right in the ass, right? You know, which, and so of course I go back and I look. The market is up, what, 8 to 12 to 15% since the war started. Money supply has gone up like 1.8% in which is a decade type of move for their money supply.
It is
in 3 months. So that pushes you to like 7 per year.
Gee, kind of like us.
It's kind of like us. The market's way up, and guess who owns a lot of the stock? 9% of all the ETFs are owned by the government, because when they were going down, they were buying.
Right, because they were buying them.
And the banks own another 29% of all the companies.
Right.
So you're talking about almost 40% of the stuff is owned by essentially the guys, however you want to call them, the people who are sort of in charge.
Right.
And you think for a second, I mean, that when you elect these people, we used to actually elect people, you know, like Truman, you know, that actually care. I'd even put Jimmy Carter, I'm not saying he was a great president, he wasn't, but in that group, that he actually cared about the people who elected him. I don't think since then it's nothing but lip service. I mean, anybody who thinks that this guy coming into the Fed, when all the Democrats in the Senate, you know, are just more FaceTime for them or whatever, I mean, how much money the guy's got, if anybody thinks he's coming in here and turning this bus around to where there's a market correction for 20% because he actually cares about inflation, I got a bridge for you. I mean,
Chief, look. I don't believe that Volcker did it because he wanted to do it. Okay, I don't believe he did it because he cared about the American public. I don't believe he did.
I think Carter put him in there because he cared.
Well, perhaps. Okay, and again, for all the slings and arrows, and boy, oh boy, when I was younger, did I throw them at Jimmy, because guess who was coming of age and was, you know, becoming an adult during that period of time.
Except you blame him for stuff he didn't do.
Well, but I didn't know any better.
Right.
All right. So, I mean, it wasn't because I was a malicious prick. It was because at the time I was ignorant of exactly how all this stuff goes together. All right.
And how long it takes.
Go figure. Yeah. I was 16, right?
Yep.
I mean, but the thing is, well, and oh, by the way, the media at the time, you know, you pick up the paper and there it is, you know, just like it is today, except now everything's BS no matter where you go in the media. And so, but there was plenty of it then. The thing is, though, is that, you know, you look at it with a little bit of hindsight, you look at it with a little bit of analysis, you actually understand how these things, you know, the mathematics of it, which at the time I did not, now I do. And you look at it from that perspective, and then I look at this thing with, you know, with Warsh coming in. Do I believe he's going to do the so-called right thing for the America? No, absolutely not. But I do believe that whether he likes it or not, they're going to get backed into a corner and be forced to pull the liquidity out.
I doubt it.
I don't, Chief. And now, what I don't know is exactly when it's going to happen.
Oh, right? I will say this, Carl. For 95% of my life, I agreed with you. Someplace, somewhere.
Now you don't. Right.
And now I don't see these guys. I don't know if they don't see what's happening. They don't want to see. They're like Sergeant Schultz. I see nothing. Chief, you know, I mean.
Okay, Chief. If you are right, okay, and you know, I will give you that it's entirely possible I'm wrong about this. All right. If you're, I prefer to believe that isn't how it's going to go down. And the reason is, if you're right, there's going to be a no bullshit shooting civil war in this country within the next 5 to 10 years.
Let me backtrack a little bit. I think you're, in order for you to be right, I think this is this is from the heart. I think you're gonna see the bozos in Washington come out yet again with a CPI up, you know, 0.2%. Someplace, somewhere, even with the takeovers of our media by all the plutocracy people, someplace, somewhere, you're gonna get some. It's gonna get so absurd, which it probably already is, that there's going to be 15 different articles every day. You might actually have a couple people believe that aren't given to one side or the other. It says, you got to stop believing this. The inflation's really 8 or 10%. And the amount of calls going to, it's not going to be a call to the White House. The amount of calls going to individual representatives saying, you better change this or you're out of here. I think the only way that could happen is almost like a revolution in the People's House, which means, you know, House of Representatives. But I don't see that happening, because most people think that they can't stand anybody in the House of Representatives except their guy.
Which is even
more bizarre.
Well, you know, it's like I pointed out to a friend of mine yesterday when I got my passport book in 7 days, and I said, you know, credit where credit is due, all right. I mean, I ripped on Obama the entire time he was in office, but he did shut down the gain-of-function research.
Okay, only have it to be on the first day Trump turned it around.
Trump reversed it in 2016, right? And guess what we got a few years later? Duh.
But you know,
right?
You know what? Funny you should mention that. All this stuff people have been sending me about the places in the Ukraine and everything.
Yeah.
And this is a general question. I mean, I love.
By the way, that's real now, and that was a conspiracy theory. You actually would get banned off social media for bringing that up, and now the declassified information comes out, and it turns out that was not BS. It was true.
All right, my question is, and you know, I'll ask Kevin tomorrow and everybody, but it gets back to my one of my core questions: does anybody pay attention to these presidential orders?
No,
I mean, when Obama said, we're not going to do it, and Trump turned it around. I don't even know what he knew what he was writing or was signing, but did it make any difference? Did
well, no, well, Chief, no. That's the answer. Is that now that the data is that the information is actually out there and declassified? Okay, what that proves is that not only was it not disinformation and you know, conspiracy theory, it was the truth, but in addition, it was being done despite the fact that it was illegal.
Well, that's where I want to go with this. I mean, I want to go because I have no idea where I'm going on this one.
Well, this doesn't stop.
I know, but let's say for instance, and this is you know, Carl, I've had discussions with mostly younger people, and I said, before the president lobs out an executive order, what is it? And everybody goes, well, it's a law. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
And I've asked people on the show, what happens to an executive order from President Roosevelt? It's been dead for 75 years. Is it still there? Does anybody even know? I mean, what is it? Is it still
there? It is still there, but it can be reversed by any future president.
I know that, but if it isn't, right, what is it? It's not anywhere. If you disobey it, you're not going to jail. It's not a law. I mean, I don't know what
these
things
because
are.
Because there's no enforcement mechanism other than the current executive.
Well, okay, so my point is, Obama signs this thing. Somebody says, we can't be doing this gain of function stuff. Maybe Obama read it between basketball games. I don't know. Say he did. Say he read it and goes, yeah, this is like a really bad idea, and he does his executive order. Okay. Right. How does that get to the 20, whatever, how many plants there are in Ukraine and in China? Those people say they're not getting their money through Congress anyway. Where are they getting the money from? I mean, if you start, I guess my question, how do we find out whether it made any difference whatsoever with him saying you can't do it, and Trump saying, I don't even know what they are. Let them do it because Obama doesn't want them to do it. I'll say it's okay. Did it make any difference to anybody? Where did they get the dough? If they got it out of the government, the person who wrote the check should go to jail. I mean, how does this... there needs to be, in my mind, an investigation, follow the money. How did it get there? If it came out of government...
But
if it came out of the CIA, Carl, I want people fired or go to jail or something.
That's exactly this, but this is the problem. Okay, you and I look at this the same way. My basic take on all of this.
Wait a minute, we agree on this?
I know we agree on something. Oh my God, it's scary. If you follow the cash flow, you will always find the truth. You may not like where it goes, but you will find it because the world runs on money. Duh.
But
right.
I'll blame Trump for the stuff I blame him, but I don't think that it made any difference that he reversed that executive order.
It did. It did in the U.S.
Okay.
Because Barrick and all the stuff in North Carolina and all you want to talk about people who ought to be in prison.
But they already had done. Okay, let's give a little bit of history of this. The NSA said it was a really bad idea. This is the one in China.
Right.
So somewhere along the line, they refused to fund it. It got to Obama's desk somehow, and he gave an executive order saying, no, we're not doing this.
So what we knew during the pandemic is that a proposal, there were two of them, depending on which way you looked at it. It was actually one proposal, but it went through two channels. It was called Drastic and Diffuse, which was a DARPA proposal.
Right.
Okay, now, those are the guys that actually originally designed the protocols that we all use today on the Internet for the purpose of making sure that if there was a nuclear war, we could get command and control stuff to the silos and blow up the other guys. Okay? That was the original design of the protocols that we all use today. Go figure. That's why it works so well. Because it has to survive a nuclear war. Anyway, they were tendered a proposal to do this research
which included doing it in bats in China. Okay.
Right, Kevin, you said something about the NCOs were the people. Some came from Europe, the money, and some came somehow through North Carolina. How they ever got involved in the mess, I don't know. But
well, because that's one of the places that we do this kind of research in the United States.
Okay.
Right? It's actually a longstanding set of labs there, okay? So, you know, I mean, universities tend to be involved in this kind of stuff. Duh, that's, you know, you got eggheads in there, and that's, you know, that's part of what they do. Okay, fine. So, anyway, DARPA threw it back. Now, this got put out into the public, no longer classified, no longer part of you know, DARPA's purview to shut people up during the actual pandemic, and the rejection letter. I've seen plenty of grants that have been written and then have been, you know, basically go away, you know, as a result when they end up in the process. I don't think I have ever seen anything come back with the kind of rebuke.
Right. I remember that, because we talked about that during the...
Right.
But here's my question, though.
You bastards are putting the Chinese public at risk with no disclosure and no right of refusal. F off. And that was essentially the answer. They did it anyway.
All right, so, I know I'm being very narrow here. I don't know if hell's around, pile in. I know I'm being narrow, but let's say Obama or Trump or anybody signs an executive order. Well, is it incumbent upon them 4 months later for Obama to say, hey, guys, remember that one I signed about these gain-of-function things? Is anybody paying attention to that, or what are we doing? Do we even know they've stopped? Do we care? Who's in charge of tracking that down? I mean, it's not the Justice Department, it's not a law. There's not a penalty. Who's in charge of, hey, did they stop or not? If he didn't think about it, who will?
Well, there's a whole bureaucracy that's supposed to, you know, be paying attention to and adhering to these things. Of course, that's in the real world, as we've all seen across multiple examples, that tends not to be how it works, is it?
Well, we've seen Trump sign, you know, five or six of them in a row. How many has he signed totally? Like hundreds of them. I mean, I can't believe that the White House staff, even if they're doing their job correctly, is chasing all these things down, you know, week after week. I mean, how can you?
Well, I don't know that. Well, first off, there's a very large bureaucratic staff that's involved in this sort of thing. So yeah, they should be. But are they? Probably not. But there are ones, you know, there is stuff that's important, and you know, some more than others, right? Is when the letters go on the Kennedy Center on the list of ones that are really important? Probably not.
Yeah.
Is whether or not people are tampering with lethal viruses one of the ones that you're paying attention to? You'd think so.
I mean, my curiosity, and yours too, is clearly aroused. Was there any difference between the DARPA saying this is a crazy idea, Obama signing this thing saying you can't do it? It seems like they did it anyway. I mean, I have a problem with that. I mean,
well, Chief, that's certainly what it looks like, doesn't it?
Well, but we've seen that with the CIA for how many years?
Well, yeah, but you know what? Here's the basic problem. There are, if you are playing with biological, you know, chemical, biological, nuclear stuff is you know, the top tier of things thou shalt not F without official authorization. Okay? I mean, there's plenty of stuff that can get you in a lot of trouble. That's kind of the, you know, on top of the pyramid. It's the tiny little speck on the top of the pyramid of those things. That we haven't still to this day. I mean, they've talked now. There's a debarment proceeding apparently against Barrick and some others on this, which basically, but it's for like 5 years. So what you're basically saying is, oh, we're going to yank your money away for a little period of time. We're not going to prosecute anybody. We're not going to throw anyone in jail for possession and work with chemical, biological, nuclear weapons outside of legal authorization. If I put a nuclear pile together in my basement, you'd never hear from me again.
Well, I'm still trying to work my way through this, and I don't know if anybody knows the answer, but it's my curiosity. Okay, DARPA says it's a really bad idea. Obama says you can't do it. And you and I say, well, the hell with
DARPA
that.
DARPA says bite me and refuses to allocate the money.
Right, okay.
Which is worse than it's just a bad idea.
Okay, all right, so Obama says you can't do it. You and I decide maybe we get some monetary gain if it does something. I don't know. Whatever, for whatever reason, we decide to send a big check to the University of North Carolina, knowing full well it's going to what province, whatever that was. The
Wuhan.
Yeah, and so it gets there. And so all of a sudden, somebody comes and grabs our asses, slaps the cuff on us, and we go to, we're in the courtroom. And the judge is going to say, where's the law? What did they break? I mean, what exactly happens to us? Nothing.
Well, chemical biological nuclear is.
Well, I'm saying that we funded a lab. We didn't fund anybody to.
Now wait a minute. Now hold on a minute. You're not going to get away with that one. That's.
I'm saying, but where in the pecking order of a real law that says if you do it, you get 30 years in the slammer? Where does an executive order and a DARPA letter land? I don't think it land anywhere.
That doesn't, however, without a license, without a formal license.
What do I need a license for in Wuhan or wherever the hell it is? Wuhan.
Because the funding flow and the materials did flow out of and into the United States. Once it touches a pair of U.S. hands in any regard.
Okay, where's the law that says I can't fund a lab in China?
The law says you can't play with these things without licenses, and oh, by the way, that's real.
Okay, I have a feeling that people can ignore a presidential. All the people who gave the money there, they're still walking around.
Figure, right? I mean, nobody has been prosecuted at all with relationship to any of this stuff.
Okay, but I guess my question, and maybe it doesn't make any difference, an executive order, does that get in the criminal code? Is that fair?
That is correct.
All right, so if somebody drags our asses in and the judge says, okay, where's the law, and what can I fine these guys, how long can I put them in jail, and they go, well, there is no criminal code about it, I don't know how anybody gets tried for that. I'm with you, by the way.
No, it's not that. It's that the fund. Okay, so the funding path and the accepted proposal and things like this come with a license to do things that are otherwise actually prohibited. Okay, so for as an example in the non-biological world, let's say I want to make a machine gun. Okay, for a civilian to manufacture a machine gun, for a person to manufacture one, no matter whether you're civilian or whatever, you have to have a license in order to do that. All right. Now, as a civilian, post the unlawful enactment of the machine gun ban that never really got passed, but did. It's a violation of House rules, so therefore it didn't really happen statutorily, but they'll still throw you in jail for it. Post that point, there isn't a way for civilian purposes for me to get that license. If I apply for it, it's going to be turned down because I can't. Okay, that's the way the statute books are written right now. So,
well, that's a travesty. You can't get a machine gun.
Well, I can have one provided that it existed prior to that ban. Okay, so there's a limited supply of those that existed at the time, and I have to apply for a license.
That's a travesty. You got to pay up for one.
Well, and I have to apply for a license. I got to pay a tax. You know,
this is all bad. I know.
Yeah, all that crap. Anyway, point being, I can't make one. If I do make one without having the license, which I can't acquire. Then I go to jail. All right, or at least I'm supposed to go to jail. If you play around with nuclear, chemical, biological agents without a specific license to do so, you're supposed to go to jail. Now, can you put me in jail if all of it happens in another country? Maybe not if I am not the one who does it. If I get on a plane and go over there and do it, probably, because I'm a U.S. person. I'm a citizen, and where I do it doesn't matter, but because it's a prohibited act for me to engage in this, in manufacturing these things. If Bat Lady over in Wuhan's lab does it, can I arrest Bat Lady? Well, not unless she comes into the U.S., right?
So I can't reach into China and grab her. We've been known to do that kind of thing, but can you legally do it? No. Can you legally do it? No.
Well, I mean, they're just running the thing, and the weird part. Where's Hal? Is he dodging us?
He's here.
He's here. Well, I'm here.
Oh, Hal, you were. I'm gonna accuse you. You were on the day. Who sent us? Was it you that sent it to me? Somebody sent there was there's a guy in this country that somehow or another was hired. Hell, I know. I think you were the guy who sent this to me. Maybe it was Kevin. There's a guy in this country that we, the U.S. of A., hired, or the press hired, or somebody that knew all about how the Chinese central government works and how the it was really interesting. Hell, I know you were the guy we talked to. I talked about it. Where they would put out a full order, I won't say an executive order, but something. But then in the margins, they would put like little additions that they'd sign off on that actually made difference in what the sentence read. And how this guy traced all this stuff based on the Wuhan thing. And all the visits that all of a sudden when this broke out, that the Central Committee made to the area, which they never normally do, and all the little things they put out, how it wasn't really their fault, but then there was an adjustment in the margin, and how it was really obvious from day one that the Chinese government knew how bad this was, and even though they claimed that they had no idea. It turns out, according to this guy, they did. He went through like millions of pages of emails and stuff from the Central Committee people and whatever, and how they were on this like white on rice right away, trying to stop it and couldn't do it. And was it you that I was talking to about that? But it was fascinating.
I don't know if it was me, but I did a little research about this back in 2020, and what I discovered is they had the Wuhan area, Wuhan City, had these mass protests in the streets during the summer prior to the pandemic. Mass demonstrations. Because the environment was so dirty and filthy, and the air was so bad, so people in that city had their health, their lung health, compromised by the incredible pollution that was going on in the city. And then a few months later, a respiratory virus escapes a lab, and it, of course, probably has negative. The negative impacts on people with compromised breathing is going to be worse than people who were, living in environments that had much cleaner air. So there was this huge protest that happened in the summer of 2019. And then we had the breakout. And by the way, through Eco Health Alliance, the Wuhan lab was financed indirectly by the NIH from 2014 through 2019. So, and they these bureaucrats use legalese to change the definition of what, is considered gain-of-function research to get around an executive order by President Obama. And President Obama's executive order wasn't an executive order. It was a memorandum, right? A directive.
I don't know what's the difference there. Have any
idea? I don't. But it wasn't on all gain of function research. It was on. Yeah, you have to read it very carefully because it, with all these things, there are,
How many people in this world do you think?
There's wiggle room.
Other than you,
there's wiggle room legally through it.
How many people even in Washington read it very carefully? Anybody except you?
I don't think anybody in Washington reads. I don't think any congressperson or senator reads anything very carefully. I think that, if President Obama or if President Trump rescinded Obama's 2014 EO, he probably did so because, with Republicans, anything Democrats do is bad. And vice versa,
that's so ignorant it's scary, but
yeah, right, Fauci and NIH is saying they need the scan of function research to better understand these viruses, and Obama stopped it, I'll rescind it. That I think that's the kind of thing.
One of my buddies, he's been on the show, he takes the Ubers a lot, right? So this is when this started, he's in the Uber with this Chinese guy, and then all of a sudden there's something comes on about, you know, the thing going on over there, and how they think there's 10,000 people dead in China. So the guy blurts out, "Hey,
well, that makes sense because I mean, the weather there, the environment there was really dirty.
I know,
and I posted these pictures of when Wuhan was shut down economically. I posted these pictures on X where you had all this pollution over that part of China, and then during the lockdown, all that pollution was gone. So environmentally, the lockdown was very good for the general health of China because they just had a dramatic reduction in just pollution.
Well, this guy says, he goes, let me help you. In China, he goes, his parents were still living in Wuhan, right? This is a driver.
Well, if you remember, they were welding people into their apartments.
Yeah, well, he that's what I'm saying. The dude says, I'm from that area. He goes, if 10,000 people die in China, you're not going to hear about it. He goes, the number's like a million.
Yeah.
He goes, they got the
crematorium.
There was
a Chinese billionaire that was a little too critical of Xi, and he was just disappeared. He just, and he was a member of the CCP.
Well, they had the crematoriums going 24/7. Yeah.
Well, if you read about that pollution that was going on for years in the Wuhan area, you know, you have all these people who have compromised lungs, and I mean, it's a respiratory virus, so
it's going to have a
high kill rate.
I love it when they were all wearing masks because of the pollution. They pull the mask down and smoke the cigarettes. Does that help?
Well, you know, those masks. When I was in the Navy, I remember this. And this was like 30 or 40 years ago, and I remember people talking about N95s and they're not allowed to be used with asbestos removal because the asbestos particles are smaller than the pores in the N95, or they can get around the edge of the. You don't use N95s in asbestos removal, and asbestos removal is a big thing in the Navy, right? Anytime a steam pipe is, you know, it's got lagging on it, it's got the insulation on it to prevent you from being burned, and anytime you open that up, you have to test it for asbestos. So I was pretty familiar with that, and all my Navy buddies are like, N95 mask, you can't even use that for lagging removal because of the asbestos particles. And then I did a little research, and virus particles, the individual pieces of virus, they're like, I don't know, 10, 50 times smaller than asbestos particles. So if you can't use an N95 for asbestos removal, how can you use it to prevent breathing
in? It just makes people feel better.
All the NIH said about the N95 is that it reduces the spread of droplets that might contain the virus. And that is much different than preventing you from breathing in virus particles.
Go ahead, Carol.
But here's the problem is that with a virus, because the replication is exponential, the difference between you getting whatever the minimum infective dose is, let's say that you have to have 50 virons to get up your nose in order to get it, right? The difference between you getting 50 and 5,000 is irrelevant.
Yeah.
If you get the 50, because the propagation, once it gets you, is exponential, each cell that gets infected spews 10,000 virons into your system.
Yeah.
The difference between a snootful and one more than you need is completely immaterial.
Carl, did they ever figure out?
Well, the CDC did say it blocked virus spread via catching droplets, but let me ask you this question.
But that doesn't matter.
A droplet that's caught in an N95,
right?
How long does it take before the virons in that droplet are released? I mean, the water droplet's going to evaporate eventually.
Well, that's right. And this was one of the other things that I pointed out to the clown faces here in our county that were doing this crap with mask mandates. I said, okay, so I can sit at a table to take it off to eat something in a restaurant, okay? As soon as I do that, I've contaminated the surface of the table.
Yeah.
All right? Now, in the time it takes me to do that, and I've contaminated that, some of that liquid evaporates. Now those virons are in the air.
Yeah, and the mask does nothing to do that. Yeah.
The mask does no
good
whatsoever.
How about the stagecoach mask that people were wearing? The
yeah, those
colored
are ridiculous.
Hanky.
Yeah.
I had one that was technically compliant. It was made out of cheesecloth.
I used to
wear that all over the place.
Indicate how ridiculous this whole thing was at my work. I bought Metallica ones, and I tied them around my, I tied them around my face like I was an outlaw who happened to be a Metallica fan.
One of the, actually, he's an attorney. I bump into him at the Tripoli Tap. Imagine that, and he's arguing with me about the masks, and he's got one with the.
Oh, there's still people wearing them.
Oh, yeah, like, we've got the...
Really?
Well, some people, like, I mean, there's people that are...
If people want to wear them, it's fine, but they're not doing anything to protect themselves against virus. They are protecting themselves against bacteria, well, because the mask is intended to stop bacteria.
There's people that are taking chemo and things like that are wearing them. I mean, I'm not going to...
But it's really about bacteria.
Right.
And a lot of the people that were, you know, pro-mask were showing us these masks with bacteria all over them, and they're saying, hey, see, it works. Well... The reason why that mask has bacteria all over it is because you've been breathing out into it all freaking day for 8 hours straight.
Well, this guy, he had the stagecoach mask on, and I go, you know, maybe you could make a case that if you're a surgeon, the mask helps out. But by the way, every time you do a new surgery, you get a new mask and everything. I said,
you don't wear it all day.
I said, when was the last time you washed that? He goes, I never have. I go, I rest my case. Hey, what did you think of our discussion about the Japanese situation regarding inflation up, stock market way up, even though they had this big crisis with oil. The banks made all this money, the government made all this money, and yet individual Japanese people are gagging on the inflation. You don't even have to look here at the politics. I mean, it's... And then, you didn't hear...
Well, that every central bank is going to have one effect, right?
Yeah.
Whoever gets the money, the newly printed money first, benefits from... assets not rising yet in price, and after they have made their purchases, their asset purchases, now eventually that money makes it to everyday, you know, citizens of whatever country.
But Carl and I were having a little discussion earlier.
Those prices have gone up.
Okay, we were having a little discussion earlier about if these are the reason why I'm, you know, Russell had all these people in last week. You probably didn't hear this, Hal, because it was after you were on Tuesday. And they went over to the Fed, and these are grad students that are like I use the term adults. They're not right out of undergrad. They're the night school people. I went over and met them. What a great group! I mean, there are people. One lady's a
master's
nurse.
Students.
Yeah, MBA.
Well, they're PhD candidates. They're not even.
These are MBA students, candidates.
Okay, MBA students.
So some of them were working.
Yeah, because most MBA programs are evening programs.
Well, some guys were in annuity, but I mean, the average age is probably 30 something. It wasn't 21. Yeah. You know, like
and usually to be a master's MBA candidate, you have to have worked in
some
business,
schools. You were in Chicago when you went straight. You could do either. Okay.
But really? Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, they went to the board of trade. They went to the Fed, and one of the guys, or maybe Russell, asked the guy at the Fed, "What about money supply?" And the guy says, "Well, that's one thing that's changed over the years. We don't consider money supply as anything to do with policy."
Oh, man. That's just the way government bureaucrats, and the Fed is, you know, government bureaucrats that work at a banking cartel. But that's what you're going to say, because you want inflation to be defined in terms of the percent increase in prices, because then you can blame the greedy corporations on it. You can shift the blame.
You can also
it's all them, too.
You can also vig the numbers. But, you know, it's so similar to the 60s and early 70s. The Fed had no idea, allegedly, what they were doing, and a little guy from the University of Chicago walked around and said, "You guys are doing it. Look at the money supply." They had no idea what he was talking about then. Now they're saying it doesn't. But I'm saying what when it comes to intent, and Carl and I were having a little discussion as to when does that stop? When does Japan say, "This feels pretty good for government and banks and people that own stock. Let's just keep it rolling." And all of a sudden, next year, the inflation rate's 15%, and you know people don't necessarily revolt in Japan, but everybody gets how pissed off do people have to get with they're being lied to, and I'm using them as a foil for us. How long are we going to listen to this bullshit?
Well, you know, with regard to Japan, maybe I'm trying to figure out why they're doing what they do, but maybe that's something.
What
do
you mean?
With...
The government owns 9% of the stock market, and the banks own 29%.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm thinking is maybe they're thinking in an aggregate sense, in a macro sense, that in 20 years, agri demand's going to be way down because they're not replacing their population. I mean, in Japan, you have a real risk of population collapse. So if the population does collapse because people aren't getting married and having kids, aggregate demand is going to be a lot lower than it is relative to today, right? So if your demand is a lot lower than it is today, then maybe they can solve this problem via that. That's the only thing I can think
of. I would.
Well, we've got the same.
Yeah, go ahead, Carl.
We got the same thing going on here.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, we're a decade behind those guys, right? Yeah. But it is absolutely the case. And yet the political answer to this appears to be to let every Somali that has a 60 IQ in here, because that way you'll make up the body count. The problem is the 60 IQ Somali can't do electrical engineering.
Yeah.
All right. And no amount of education will fix that. So,
Well, I think in the United States, I was looking at it in a red county versus blue county birth rate. The birth rate in red counties is not as low as it is in blue counties. In blue counties, you have a substantial reduction in the marriage rate and the birth rate. But in red counties, you don't really see that as much. I mean, it is lower than it was 20 years ago, but it's not as stark as it is in the blue counties.
Well, right, if you guys, across
the country, it only matters in aggregate. So,
yeah.
When you guys have young people where you are, okay, but obviously, so I'm not telling you anything you already know, but if you were here on a Thursday or Friday night and we landed over at the Series, not that we'd ever have an adult beverage, sometimes the young people come in that work, and some of them are with FINRA, some of them are with OCC, whatever. They sit down, they're good kids to me. Every one of them was making 65 maybe a year, 70, which doesn't sound all that horrible. They all have 30 to 100 in student loans. If you ask them, are you ever going to own a new car? No. You'll be able to buy a house? No. I've yet to ask, but now I will after your guys' conversation. By the way, you're thinking about starting a family. They'd look at me like I had four heads.
Not a snowball's chance in Haiti.
Yeah, and they're all 29 to 33 years old.
Yeah.
And that's when you're supposed to be starting a family, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't start mine until I was 39.
Hell, if you haven't figured it out yet, you're a little odder than most.
Yeah, I'm a little I was.
We love you, so we say eccentric. We don't say peculiar.
Yeah, I was the guy that in my 20s and 30s, I had a backpack on my back, and I would jump on a plane or just go on a road trip and end up somewhere working on some math problem or studying for my PhD exams and just... I was the guy that showed up at your house with a six-pack of beer. Right? I didn't even knock. I just walked in.
Well, and my Irish and Italian halves, the Italians all want to essentially get married, have a family. It's a very family sort of group.
Ours was too, but I was just a different duck.
Well, the Irish side, you don't want any part of it until you're 39 and you say, okay, I better get married. In the next 8 years, you have seven kids. I mean, it's a gross generalization, but from the south side, I know both halves. And then the Irish guy's the happiest day in his life is when the last kid moves out. when the Italians want the kids back every Sunday, the Italians are very similar to anybody who's kind of around, it's a gross generalization, but if you go to a baseball game at Crestwood, there's a lot of Hispanics there. But it's not just... There's grandma, there's grandpa, there's four kids. Everybody's holding the kid. All the kids are amazingly well-behaved. The whole thing. I used to play softball in a Hispanic league. The stands are jammed. All the grandparents are there, all the grandkids. Everybody's behaved. I'm like, it's not like going to Mount Greenwood where you might have two people there. It's all very... But Italians are very similar to that, Irish are not.
That was the thing that I learned from my parents is, even though they were... psychos in their 20s. I mean, they had issues and there was abuse and they got divorced. Both were in their 20s when they got divorced. But the one thing they did do is they went to all of our events, whether they were theater or sporting events. They were there. And in Idaho, when you go to a road game where you're playing basketball or football, the road trip is going to be 150 miles. My parents... were at all the games.
Well,
in Idaho, in Oregon, when I was in a junior in high school, some of our road trips were 200 miles, and they were at every one of our games, my stepfather, my mom. And then when my brother Ryan and I were coaching at Troy High School for a year, the parents of the players wouldn't go on the road trips, but my parents were on those road trips with us. In Northern Idaho, you have a road trip. You have to go through mountain ranges and river roads and whatnot. And it takes you 2 hours to get to the game, but my parents were there. So that's what I try to do with my kids.
Well, when I was in Little League, my mother came to every game.
Yeah,
and,
I'm going to be there.
But you would never... I always rode my bike with my mitt. The thought of getting a ride from your mother, that would never
happen. You know,
that would never happen.
I preferred hanging out with my parents than my friends. I would...
Well, if it was 100 miles, I wouldn't have taken my bike.
For me, hanging out with my stepfather, Jim, was a lot of fun because he talked to me like an adult, and we had adult conversations from the age 16 and on. I mean, on the back porch,
good.
He was drinking his coffee. I was drinking my coffee. I was 18, and we were having three-hour conversations, and I enjoyed that more than hanging out with my friends. And my kids, they like hanging around us. They're around us all the time, and they don't really want to hang out with anybody else except our family. So it's
there's a lot of that, yeah.
But that's what I wanted. I wanted my kids to be each other's best friend, and I wanted them to want to be around us, and I got that in spades.
Carl, are you trying to imagine the plays Hal was in and what roles he might have had? You with us still, Carl? You still with us? He must have dropped off. I'm trying to think of what roles you might have had.
Roles? What do you mean,
roles? In the plays, you're talking about they'd come to a play.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, when I was in seventh grade, I was the second to the star of the play. I think it was a Pinocchio play. And Doug Hipwell was the star. And I didn't learn any of the lines because I thought I'd have no chance of getting on stage.
Oh, God.
Well, the day of the play, Doug is quote-unquote sick. And they're like, Hal, you got to go on. And I didn't know any of the lines.
What do they call it? You were the second.
It turned into a comedy because I was just winging it, man. And I was in seventh grade, and I had a blast doing it. I need to talk to my brother Ryan and my brother Todd about it because the whole high school,
God.
It was a junior senior high school, they were there and everybody was laughing at me, and I was just winging it on stage.
You were the Bill Murray of your time. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 2. We'll be right back. NASDAQ Futures down
6. Promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Loan Bikes, Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down $1.07, down 2. NASDAQ Futures down 20. I'm a little confused here because there's two different... We're doing the June and the September on the futures here, and then come the end of the week, there's only going to be the September. But this is a triple, which would be Friday, but we're not trading Friday. We're trading... we're off for Juneteenth, so Thursday is the last day this week. No show Friday, by the way. Over in Europe, these guys were rocketing up yesterday. DAX up another 148 today, 0.6%. FTSE, which was a laggard yesterday, is up 64.6%. A CAC round up 68.8%, so moderately bullish over there again. Nikkei up 87, had a huge move up yesterday. Again, we've been talking about their stock market, and how the stock market is way higher than when the war started, despite all the alleged hardships because of that. Hang Seng down 348, that's 1.5%. Shanghai down 4, call that flat. Fines. Interest rates have been coming down a little bit again today. 10 years, 4.44, down from the 4.5, but not exactly shooting down. I mean, they're down a little bit. Oil down another $3, 77.72. RBOB, 289. So everybody should be below, if you add, well, again, you got to look at the difference of the states, whatever state you happen to have, but you got to add somewhere between, I'm going to say, 80 cents to $1.20 to that, depending on transportation and taxes, so everybody should be under $4 pretty soon, I'm guessing. Gold up another $10. It was a big move yesterday, 43.62. Silver up another 31 cents, 70.49. They had moves yesterday as well. We had a lot of people in silver and gold, still do, and boy, they had a nice day. That was nice. The euro, we're slightly under 116, 115.9. British pound, 134, so the dollar's a little stronger. Japan just are unchanged. They're right at 160. So they really have not, they have not strengthened with this at all. So they've still got currency problems, even though their market's way up. Crypto up 87, 66,000, 695. Ricky, Woody Air Force Traffic Weather Sports Cubs, one of the ninth again last night.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 67 degrees right now with a high of 75. Mostly cloudy with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. Tonight, may partly cloudy with a low of 59 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 89 degrees right now with a high of 112. Mostly sunny and hot. Dangerous heat and a thunder shower in the area later in the afternoon. Tonight, mainly clear and very warm with a low of 89 degrees. Now for traffic in Chicago, there's an accident on the right shoulder of Kennedy westbound at Lake Street, exit 51A. Heavy congestion inbound on Eisenhower starts at Harlem Avenue and ends at Independence Boulevard. All other major roadways are experiencing some congestion in spots, but no big delays. For the sports, super quick, NHL Finals last Saturday, Carolina wins the Stanley Cup with a dominating 3-0 game 6 against Golden Knights. And also on Saturday, the drought finally ended and Knicks win their first NBA final title since 1973 after a close game 5, 94-90. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
The
you know, I didn't even know Carolina won the NHL.
You know what? Hell, you and I...
And I'm living in North Carolina.
As scary as it may seem, we're starting. This is starting to get freaky, you and I on the show. I was just going to say, it went on so long, did you even remember that they were playing? That was my first question. You beat me to it.
I didn't even know they were playing.
Does anybody... I mean, if you're not from those two places...
North Carolina is just not a hockey place. You don't expect people to play hockey here.
Well, and it's... I don't see how... It's one thing...
I mean, hockey is where they play it in, like, Detroit and Chicago, yeah. Not North Carolina.
Well, and even the basketball. I mean, if you... The idea that if... When you, I know they got schedules and so forth, and it's all about the Benjamins. But if the other team would have won in four, like the Knicks did the series before this, they were going to be a solid week without a game. How do you not even, unless you're from New York or San Antonio, how do you not even forget they're playing in the middle of June?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I can tell J-Lo that I was a New Yorker because I've killed a roach with my hand. I've been on a subway where I was stuck in there for like 2 hours. I got yelled at by a homeless guy walking out of the subway terminal. I actually enjoy riding the subway because I hate traffic.
Well, so do I. Right? Plus, it's
but
it's
I was in New York for 2
system.
Years, so I was interested in the series in that regard. And I still can't believe the Knicks won with their point guard being as small as he is, given that the San Antonio guards were allowed to just rough him up. I just don't understand.
That kid's pretty tough.
How the Knicks won.
That kid's pretty tough.
I mean, he is tough. They really manhandled him. He didn't have a lot of freedom of movement. And you know, I just don't understand how those three guards defending
you
him.
Know,
they did a great job.
You I'm sure you know this, and the listeners probably do too. If he looks out there like, you know, he
can't run and he can't jump, but somehow
he's
good.
Well, you know, if you stood next to him, you'd go, wait a minute. This guy's got muscle on top of muscle.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
but
not
it,
normal guys.
Guys, he doesn't.
Well,
look
they
like
don't look like they do, but they do.
I think his key is the amount of backspin he puts on the ball. Yeah, if you look at it, the way he shoots, he puts so much backspin on the ball that it just kind of like.
But look
bounces
at,
around on the rim.
Look at his release because I'm. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to put myself anywhere near.
He has a Vinnie Johnson type of release where his arm is fully extended.
Yeah, but he also, when I had zero talent for basketball other than being fairly tall at 6'4".
And he can't coach 6'4".
But I loved it. I couldn't even touch the rim, much less. I mean, I couldn't jump at all.
You couldn't touch the rim?
Oh, God, no. I had absolute white man.
I have short arms, and I got my wrist over the rim.
What part
for my
of
legs.
White man's disease...
My brother Rod had white man's disease. Well, he could jump about an inch off the ground.
But you know, you learn to do stuff. And I played against.
Oh yeah,
one
definitely.
Of the guys that I played high school ball, and he was playing. We were playing some one-on-one one day, and he says, "You know, I should be able to block every one of your shots. You can't jump." He goes, "But I can't." And here's why. You might not even know this. He goes, "Because you can't jump, you've learned to not give me any signal whatsoever." Of when you're about to shoot. That guy doesn't do that either. He's right there. You never dream he's going to shoot, and all of a sudden he's up and it's gone.
Yeah.
He's like...
My brother Rod had a one-inch vertical, and I had about 30-plus.
Well, there you go.
And I remember trying to block his layup.
You sure you had the same
and
dad?
I'd be... I'd be above the rim trying to block, and I'd be 1 inch from blocking a shot.
Yeah.
And he'd throw it off the backboard with spin and go in.
That kid has, he's like, he's got a Jerry West release.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you never know, he doesn't gather himself at all. He just does it. He's incredibly hard to guard.
I think the way he flicks it up there, he has an incredible amount of backspin.
Yeah.
There was a UCLA Bruin, a white guy, McPherson. He put it at Banyan, I think. And he would purposely just spin it the way he shot it. Like, he would flick it up there on the post. And it hit the rim, and it would just, like, die. It was like when you put backspin on a golf shot.
But for his height,
pitching wedge.
For his height, I'll bet he's 10 or 15. And for a guy who's in fantastic condition, I'll bet he's 10 or 15 pounds heavier of nothing but muscle that you don't even notice on TV.
Yeah.
If you stood next to him, you'd say, they're not normal dudes. I'm just telling you, they're not.
The way he got manhandled by the defenders, and they were throwing three and four guys at him, they're really elite defenders, Ron Harper's
son. And they were letting them hack. The refereeing was horrendous.
Well, they're letting him hold. That was the key. They were letting him hold, and they put that arm bar on him to redirect him, but, man, it didn't faze him.
No, anybody who's ever played basketball, I mean,
arm bar is really key because they're really good at hiding how much they displace the dribbler with that arm bar. They're really coached well on.
We know he's a second round pick, and Dallas cut him, as Kevin texts in.
At what Dallas has done.
But anybody thinks that basketball is all just running, the upper body strength. I mean, I was the center on
that was the key
team.
To Adrian Dantley.
Yeah.
Adrian
Dantley was an incredibly strong human being. Incredibly strong. I mean, look at him now. The guy's not even heavy. He wears like a 60 coat or something. I mean, might be a little heavy. Hey, so what? When we're going through this policy and everybody is drinking the Kool-Aid and, you know, they're drinking the good sake in Japan if you own the stock. There's no such thing as a zombie bank anymore. They all made their money back, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so how do we?
I think the United States is in a key key position relative to the rest of the world.
But we're doing the same thing.
But relative to the rest of the world, I've always said that the most free nation is going to one that's going to remain on top. And I've been watching and listening. I do spend a lot of time on Twitter because 50% of the users are Democrats, 50% are Republicans, so somewhere in the middle is the truth. So I do a lot of time on Twitter, and I've been observing what people, fans, World Cup fans, when they come to the United States, they're driving around, they're having interactions with people, they're going to like places like Bucky's and Sheetz and Walmart, things that they don't have in their home country. And what I've realized is, if you really want to know what America's like, I think you have to get outside the cities and just see how nice people are in suburban and rural areas. There are reports of people, fans, you know, waiting for an Uber at a hotel and it's raining and they decide to like walk because the Ubers are so slammed with traffic that somebody at the hotel will just give them a ride to the stadium, right? There's all these kinds of anecdotes all over the place,
I heard Ubers are 11 times as 400 some bucks to go 3 blocks or something.
Well, the demand is so high for these events, so a lot of the fans are just walking. But
why don't we have cabs anymore? Why don't we have cabs anymore? Why don't we have cabs anymore?
Well, the cabs were outcompeted by Uber, right? The cabs had their medallions and their licenses from government, and government restricted the number of cabs, and it drove the fare up. And you know, when competition enters a market, and people entered that market because the margins were high, not for the drivers of a cab, but for the owner of the medallion, the margins were high. So an entrepreneur is going to notice that and enter the market.
Okay, but all right. So how does?
So just over the long run, even a monopoly can fall apart.
All right. Well, it was never. We need to have a more time. Well, we got a little bit of time here. That was always Milton Friedman's. He'd love to talk about cabs. He'd love to talk about medical schools.
Yeah.
But the thing with the cabs.
I was talking to students yesterday, high school students. They came to A&T's campus yesterday, and I was telling them, and these are black students mostly, black high school students, because we're a historically black college. And so most of the high school students that were on campus yesterday were black. There were a few others, but mostly black kids. And I was telling them about how it's so much fun to be an economist because you get to apply economics to historical events. And I mentioned to them, and I asked them a question. Does anybody know why the American Medical Association issued an apology to Black America in 2009? And nobody had an answer for that. And I go, well, it's because the government gave the American Medical Association the power to license. And what did the American Medical Association...
They gave it to them 100 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And what did the American Medical Association do with that power? And who was running the American Medical Association at the time? Well, white Christian males, right? White Anglo-Saxon males were running it. And what did they do? They shut down medical schools that were serving people of color, Black people, or women, or Jewish people. So the American Medical Association used its power to limit competition from females, Blacks, and Jews. And what did it do? It created a profession that was highly dominated by white males. And because the supply of doctors was artificially low, it drove up their salaries. So I use that as one of many.
I think they drove up the salaries first and worried about what they looked like second. They were more worried about
It just goes back to Dr. Seuss and Starbillies, right? People have learned that if they can create artificial scarcities in an occupation, they can drive up the salaries. And nursing does this all the time. My friend Peggy from Portland, she was a high school friend of mine, she was going to get her nursing degree in the 1990s, and she goes, man, they just made... Now I got to take algebra. And I'm like, you got to take algebra as a nursing student? She goes, yeah. And I go, do you use math at all in nursing? She goes, well, I got to calculate like a percent change. And I'm like, oh, I know what it is. They're creating these difficulties. They're making it artificially difficult to limit the number of people who can get the degree and the license so they can drive their salary up. And I did that before I even took an econ class.
As an individual who's had to have changes in life in between business and business, the whole idea that you should only learn what you need in the one space you're working and assume you're there for the rest of your life is not the right way to go about it.
No, it's not. I truly believe in a historical liberal arts education, not a liberal arts education where the liberal means political liberal, a traditional liberal arts degree where you're reading all the great books. You're being exposed to theater. You're being exposed to fine art. You're being exposed to calculus. No matter if you're an art major or a business major, you take all these different classes. That's how
I'm gonna argue with you.
Should be organized.
I'm gonna argue with you on the calculus. Just argue, because I love arguing with you. For a guy like you that uses
you can teach calculus in a way where everybody can get it. You can do that. You can. I'm convinced of it.
Here's my bitch about calculus, and I want to get back to the market here.
Calculus makes all that cosmology possible, man. That's why Newton invented it. To make the algebra can't do orbital mechanics, but calculus you can. You can do it from there.
I was actually in my freshman year at Notre Dame. I actually was very good at calculus.
It blew my mind. I was like, whoa.
Well, there were like I don't know how many hundred people were in calculus, and I think I was one of the top 25 on the final. And this wasn't math. It was calculus for all the pre-med students and the chemistry students and everything else.
Yeah.
You know what, Hal? A year later, and I have a pretty good memory, there is no reinforcement anywhere. A year or two later, it was like I never even took it. And today, I remember stuff from a history class. If you gave me a derivative right now, I'd say, what is that? There is no reinforcement whatsoever if you don't do it.
Yeah.
So you still do it. So it's fresh and it's...
That's the same with a theater class or a fine art, you know, class where you explore paintings. I think being exposed to that made me more creative than I would have been otherwise.
I know it exists.
I get really creative in my modeling and my programming.
I know, but you, if I would have kept using it, I'd have been okay. But if you were to say, hey, Chief, what's an arc cosine? I'm going... What?
Well, do you ever talk about betas, stock betas?
That's as far as I go.
That's a derivative.
I understand that. I know it enough. That's been reinforced, okay?
A derivative is just a change in something over infinitesimally small
Once in a while, I will say it's the second derivative of the curve. I remember that part as it applies to the business, okay? Because that I've had minimal reinforcement. But if you ask me to do something that I haven't looked at in 50 years, it's not something you just, it pops into your head.
Well, hey, I'll give you an idea of how you can use calculus when you go to the movies next time. You can, you can compare the price of the 55-ounce soda to the 20-ounce soda.
I could do that before.
And you take the difference in the cost of the price, and you divide that by the change in the ounces, and you've got a
I can still derivative. Do that. I can still do that. Only Hal would be the guy that said, you know, I forgot all this stuff. Oh, no, you didn't. Anyway.
Well, you know, calculus is so powerful that you
it's incredibly powerful.
Thinking about it.
I thought it was absolutely spectacular. All I'm saying is if you don't use it, you lose it.
I mean, you know, in my calculus experience, I took it from Dr. Kratz, just an incredible guy. He walks in day one of the class. He's got a ponytail. He looks like Captain Kangaroo. Literally looks like Captain Kangaroo. He comes walking in with a ponytail, and he puts down his final from college algebra, because at Idaho State, a math professor would teach college algebra, calc 1, calc 2, calc 3, and then start over. So a student could follow their professor all the way through the college algebra to the calculus 3 sequence, right?
Yep.
So he comes walking in, he puts down 30 copies of his final on his algebra final from the previous semester. And they threw down the syllabus. And he goes, here's the syllabus. Here's the final from college algebra. Work on the final exam. If you can't do it, drop my class. And then he walked out, right? God. And I'm like, dude, this guy's cool, because he just threw down the gauntlet. And I was in the Navy for 6 years, and I was always good at math. Never, ever failed a math test. I grabbed that take-home final. I don't remember how to do anything. I walk into his office, and I go, hey, Dr. Kratz, I was in the Navy for 6 years. I'm really good at math. I'm not going to be able to do your final, but I want to stay in the class. What do I need to do for the next week? And he goes, get a math book and work all the way through the algebra book, all the way through logarithms for the first week. So I did. And then I after that first semester of calculus, we went from about 30 students to about 15. And then Calc 2, we were following Dr. Kratz through. We only had like 8 in there. And then Calc 3, there was only 4 of us left. So it was just crazy attrition.
I was pretty good at the stuff where you get an answer. They blew me away at the University of Chicago when I was doing like integer programming, where there's never really any answers.
That's like statistics. I mean, you get a nice little neighborhood of the answer.
But
right?
but it's all these minimum maximum kind of things. And
yeah,
I was totally blown away by the coloring problem.
When I took differential equations, I remember during spring break, we had this homework assignment, and I would spend 8 hours a day at the library doing my differential equations homework. And then I'd go party with my brothers, right, night at the bar. And I worked on this one problem. It was an 8-page integral. The solution was 8 pages long.
Well,
and on the first day of
this
class,
this is way above my pay grade. I never got anywhere near this, nor did I want to.
The guy goes, hey, don't turn in your, you don't have to turn in that problem. And I raised my hand and I said, I got the solution. It is correct. I worked on it all during spring break. You're going to read it. And I turned it in.
Well, I took this integer programming, which was really dumb, except I had the professor before, and he goes, oh, yeah, you're okay. You'll be fine. Well, I wasn't fine. It was me, and it was like 9 PhD students that already had their jobs at like mobile. And this is the kind of stuff you use if you're...
Well, you know, in Chicago, those PhD students are probably... rocket scientists.
Well, they were all good. You know, use all that stuff for people. We talk on the show once in a while about like refineries, and when you get oil from Venezuela or from some other place, and you look at all the different prices and all the different products that you can get out of the oil, and you look at the quality of the oil. Those are the guys that decide. Okay, we're going to get an extra gallon of diesel out of this versus gas versus, you know, some.
That extra gallon of diesel, yeah. That's the derivative, Tom.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. So those are the guys who do all those formulas to try and figure out whether they take the prices and whatever, put that all together. But the part that blew me away, well, the book was this tiny little book. And most of the time, you were in Chicago, when you went and got your stuff for your course, you ended up with this big manila envelope full of all these papers that people wrote, you know, of all these different economists going back through the ages.
Yeah.
Well, they get this little book, and the guy goes, well, you know, we just do the formula part because the actual solving of the problem is beyond the scope of the course. what is he talking about? I had no idea what the hell was going on in that class ever. It was the last class
I took real analysis 2 semesters, and the book was like 120 pages long. The only numbers in this real analysis book was page numbers and definition numbers. Everything else was Egyptian hieroglyphics. Yeah. It was awesome.
Well, the book was the smallest book I ever bought. It was also the most expensive.
This one was too, yeah.
But it also was the most expensive.
It was
expensive.
Like a half inch thick, if
but
that.
But it was also the most expensive.
Yeah, and it was denser than anything you ever read in your
and
life.
I'm like, I should have just said, I'm out of here, you know, type of thing.
Well, the density of those books is incredible. Those high-level math books, just incredible.
Anyway, what happens with a SpaceX? How much? What happens with a Micron? What is going on with momentum trading versus what you're talking about with money pouring into, the market? All this stuff becomes marginal right out of the gate, where people can, if you want to buy 1,000 shares of Micron today, somebody's going to lend you $500,000.
Yeah,
if you have $500,000, so I mean the ability.
Well, if you have money and you can buy on margin, you can make it big in a centrally planned environment like the United States with its central bank.
Yeah, I mean, what other than, I guess, if you had some sort of rational stuff like you and I when we're not arguing back and forth, we would say if you had a plan. That since the population is growing by, you know, whatever, 2%, or actual real economic growth is 2%, I'll be nice and say it is. I'm not sure it is.
I think the population growth is more like just under 1%.
Okay, roll with me here. We have for a second.
Yeah.
If we ever agreed on the number, I think we would agree that you want your money supply to grow basically what that number is. Correct.
Yeah. I think so.
Because that hasn't happened now for a long period of time.
But Tom, that's my pragmatic self.
Well, that's me too.
Fed is here; it's not going anywhere. Pragmatically, that is the least bad policy.
Okay, so all right, let's take it to the next step. The next step is, all right, we've got people who now we know who the winners and the losers are, and because we've become, I'm not saying it's all Republicans, we've become a plutocracy, which means. The people with money are running the place, even though the rest of the people think they aren't.
Even in the Democrat cities, the people running the place are the people with money.
Did I say?
Yeah. I'm just saying. But even among the party that's supposed to be the party of the poor, they don't care about the poor.
They care
about themselves.
Obama, I think Obama did more for the rich than anybody. I mean,
definitely. Yeah. He's looking at the way cities.
So I'm sure not arguing on that. But the point being, that group is in charge. What are the chances of the old Fed guy, the new Fed guy saying, okay, we know we're not going to fight the inflation we put in the last 5 years. You just got that jammed up your behind. But even going forward, can we keep the inflation down to 1.5-2% going forward? And the answer is no, because those people make so much money when it's higher than that.
Yeah, now, they need to create the inflation.
I'm going to say in Japan,
if they're not creating the inflation, then buying on margin, these leveraged purchases, it doesn't work. You have to create inflation for these leveraged purchases to yield you, 30-100% returns annually.
Don't even go to the politics here. Go to Japan. Yeah. You think now if there's a huge meeting today, not with guys like you and me, because we'd be arguing the whole time. Now, the bankers and the people in the government, how sorry do you think they are that they have made all this money during this horrible war and they put the entire inflationary price on the backs of the other 98% of the people? How sorry do you think they are? I think they're not sorry at all and want to keep it going.
Yeah, the people that run the system, they want to keep going.
Yeah. So the
question, they want the inflation.
All right, so the question is...
The government's wanting inflation, too.
Okay,
at property tax. Right, how can you raise property tax revenue if you don't touch the percentage rate that you impose?
Okay, so...
Well, you have to grow the value of the property. How do you do that with inflation?
All right, I'll give one more question because we got to go. Back in the 70s, all right, so I think if these guys and women can keep going, telling the population, dumb as we are, that the inflation is 2 or 2.5% when it's really 6 or 6.5%, and they're making money like bandits on hotels and not so much commercial real estate, but on hotels and stock market. The almost revolt came in the 70s when the inflation got to 10 to 12%, where people go, you got to stop this. And by the way, you're coming out of office either by vote or by you know, hook or something. I mean, that's the spot that probably that, you know, Carl's right. There'll be such an upheaval we're tired of being lied to. We're a long way from that. And the idea that we're so dumb now that we let people. Why isn't there hell in this world with computers, with guys as smart as you? Why isn't there, whenever they come out with the consumer price thing, why don't three people get on Fox, Bloomberg, and CNBC and go, this is all bullshit. Here's what the number really is. Because now they're owned by the people who are.
Well, the media is the gatekeeper of the state. So.
Well, they didn't used to be to this extent.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're the gatekeepers.
When you had four newspapers in Chicago, people were dying to say what you and I say every day. Now nobody does.
If you say something that's counter to a conservative narrative or a liberal narrative, you're looked at as a conspiracy theorist.
It's worse than that. Bezos will come buy your newspaper and fire your ass.
Yeah.
That's worse than them just looking at you bad.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of these people?
They're not going to invite somebody on that has a narrative that is counter to.
How does that look at the whole thing? The guys who just bought, was it Paramount and somebody else got together? Why are they allowed to get together? That's insane.
Yeah. Well, they're only going to bring people on who think the Fed is a free market institution.
I'm saying we're the people who. Guys like us are being tossed off. They don't want us on there. And people are believers. There's people that believe Trump, for God's sake. Why? There's people that believe Biden. Why? Yeah. I mean, anyway, S&P futures down 2 and NASDAQ futures down 50. We'll see if this lands. I think we'll probably rally up. Starlink is up another $9. Not Starlink, SpaceX, which is Starlink's going in there and making any money. And we've got Micron is up $8. It was up more than that. It's almost 1,100. Hal, thank you. There is no show Fridays. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Ricky, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.